And now it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. I'm Uncle Dennis in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz on this Thursday, March 5th, 2015. Want to remind you that you might hear something you want to write down, so it might be a good thing to have a pencil and paper handy. You might want to jot down a web page, maybe a address, telephone number, something that you might want to remember later. So let's start out with the Buffalo Field campaign update from the field for this week. They write from Hebgen Lake that it has been a very quiet week in the field for our friends the buffalo. Since last week's update, there has been no capture, nor have any buffalo been killed by hunters. We are enjoying this respite, as are the buffalo, and are preparing for the spring migration to begin soon in the Hebgen Basin near West Yellowstone. They also write they're seeking buffalo warriors for this field season. Buffalo Field Campaign has seasonal openings for field volunteers. We have opportunities for every season, but we are in great need of folks during our field season, which runs until late May. It is when wild bison are migrating into Montana. Any buffalo within Montana's borders is in danger of being shot on sight, hazed, or captured and shipped to the slaughterhouse. All volunteers are provided with room, board, gear, training, and you'll get to go out on their field patrols. We cater to almost any dietary need and respect vegan and vegetarian diets. They also serve some tasty roadkill and occasional fish out of Hebgen Lake. We are located in a warm log cabin by beautiful Hebgen Lake, just a few miles west of West Yellowstone, Montana. Go to the webpage for information and contact info about volunteering with the Buffalo Field Campaign. That webpage is www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. If you want to send them something, and they do occasionally need some gear, you can figure out what that is on the webpage and send it to Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. If you have any questions, give them a call at 406-646-0070. That's 406-646-0070. All this information and more is on their webpage at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. The Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And tell Congress, reject the No More National Parks Bill. For more than 100 years, the Antiquities Act has allowed presidents to use their executive authority to protect America's public lands by designating national monuments. It's why we have national treasures like the Grand Canyon National Park in Arizona and Chimney Rock National Monument in Colorado. It's a presidential privilege that has literally shaped America's landscape and its history, but Republicans in Congress now think it's time to end all of that. Last month, Republican Congressman Representative Don Young introduced a bill that would strip the president of this authority. The MAST Act would overhaul the Antiquities Act, requiring any presidential designations to go through a crippling process of congressional approval, making it nearly impossible for presidents to designate new national monuments. It's a cynical attempt to forever block the president's ability to protect lands from drilling and mining companies who want to exploit these lands for profit. The way the law works now, presidents can quickly set aside lands for protection and conservation through proclamations instead of going through the more complicated congressional process of creating a national park. In fact, it's often the first step in creating a national park. The Grand Canyon was first designated a monument under the Antiquities Act by Theodore Roosevelt. Here's what's really ironic. Representative Don Young, the sponsor of the bill, features a photo of Denali National Park and Preserve, which was originally dedicated as a monument under the Antiquities Act in 1978, as the background for his congressional website. Protecting the Antiquities Act and stopping this bill isn't just about safeguarding America's environment and historical heritage. It's also an economic issue. National monuments create tourism and economic activities in places that wouldn't receive it otherwise. If we don't stop the MAST Act, it could be a big win for Republican Congress's right-wing agenda. We can't allow this to happen. Thank you for your activism. Please go to www.credoaction.com. That's C-R-E-D-O-A-C-T-I-O-N CredoAction.com. And a court has upheld marbled murrelet protections. The District of Columbia Circuit Court of Appeals last Friday rejected yet another attempt by the timber industry to remove federally endangered species protections from the marbled murrelet, a unique coastal bird found in the Pacific Northwest. The appeal was the timber industry's fifth attempt in the past decade to eliminate protections for old-growth forests that marbled murrelets call home. Despite undisputed scientific evidence that has shown murrelets are continuing to disappear from the coasts of Washington, Oregon, and California, the D.C. Circuit soundly disposed of industry's arguments, most of which it called frivolous, said Kristen Boyles, a staff attorney at Earth Justice. Five strikes and you're out, and there is no support in science, law, or public opinion for the industry's continued demand to log public old-growth marbled murrelet forests. The marbled murrelet is a shy, robin-sized seabird that feeds at sea but nests only in old-growth forests along the Pacific coast. Murrelets don't build nests, but instead lay their single egg on a large moss-covered branch in old-growth Douglas fir, Sitka spruce, western hemlock, and redwood trees. In 1992, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service protected marbled murrelets in Washington, Oregon, and California as a threatened species due to the logging of old-growth coastal forests. The timber industry has waged a 15-year legal campaign to eliminate protections for the small seabird in order to increase logging of some of the region's last remaining mature and old-growth forests. It's time to move forward with recovering these unique seabirds, said Noah Greenwald, Endangered Species Director at the Center for Biological Diversity. We know what we need to save the marbled murrelet, and it's protecting the last coastal old-growth forests in Oregon, California, and Washington. Murrelets down here in the southern end of their range need more, not less, protection and recovery, said Tom Wheeler, Program and Legal Coordinator with the Environmental Protection Information Center in Arcata, California. The marbled murrelet's coastal old-growth habitat is known the world around for its biological treasures, said Dave Wernz, Science and Conservation Director at Conservation Northwest. This court ruling ensures the murrelet and its old forest habitat have a shot at recovery. Represented by Earth Justice, the Audubon Society of Portland, Seattle Audubon Society, the Center for Biological Diversity, Conservation Northwest, Environmental Protection Information Center, Oregon Wild and Sierra Club intervened in the lawsuit to defend the murrelet listing and its critical habitat. For more information, go to www.biologicaldiversity.org. And Kenya has burned 15 tons of raw ivory in this story by Humphrey Malalo, with additional reporting and writing by George Abululutsa, editing by Larry King, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. Kenya burnt 15 tons of ivory on Tuesday and promised to destroy all of its stockpile this year, the latest step in its campaign against elephant poaching. Poaching has surged in the last few years across sub-Saharan Africa, where gangs kill elephants and rhinos to feed Asian demands for ivory and horns for use in folk medicines. A 2014 UN and Interpol report estimated that 20,000 to 25,000 elephants were killed in Africa every year, out of a total population of as many as 650,000, excuse me. As part of Kenya's continued policy to put ivory beyond economic use, I will today burn 15 tons of ivory at this historic site in Nairobi National Park, President Uhuru Kenyatta said during a ceremony at the park. In order to underline our determination to eradicate poaching, my government shall burn the rest of the stockpile within this year. The ceremony was to mark the African Union-designated Wangari Maathai Day in honor of the late environmentalist and Nobel Prize laureate and World Wildlife Day. Kenya has imposed stiffer penalties, longer jail terms, and bigger fines for wildlife poaching or trafficking, saying poaching is harming tourism, a major earner of foreign exchange. In January of 2014, a Kenyan court convicted a Chinese man of smuggling ivory and ordered him to pay a fine of 2 million shillings, about $233,000, or serve 7 years in jail, the first sentencing since Kenya introduced the new anti-poaching law. A Kenyan man is in police custody accused of being behind an international poaching syndicate involving elephant tusks and was linked to a 3-ton haul of ivory seized in Mombasa in June of 2014. Illegal trade in wildlife has become a sophisticated transnational form of crime comparable to other pernicious examples such as the trafficking of drugs, humans, counterfeit items, and oil, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said in a statement. It is driven by rising demand and is often facilitated by corruption and weak governance. There is strong evidence of the increased involvement of organized crime networks and non-state armed groups. In 2011, then-President Mwai Kibaki set fire to 5 tons of contraband ivory. His predecessor, Daniel Toroitich Arap Moi, did the same in 1989. And NRDC has sued U.S. EPA over monarch butterfly's demise. The story written by Carrie Gilliam, edited by David Gregorio, World Environment News, Thomson Reuters. The Natural Resources Defense Council, or NRDC, sued the U.S. government, accusing regulators of discounting the dangers of a widely used herbicide poses to the declining monarch butterfly population. The environmental group filed suit against the Environmental Protection Agency in U.S. District Court in New York. The suit claimed the agency has failed to heed warnings about the dangers to monarchs posed by glyphosate, a key ingredient in a widely used herbicide called Roundup. Glyphosate is used in Monsanto Company's Roundup and other herbicides. Federal law requires the Environmental Protection Agency to ensure that pesticides it approves will not cause unreasonable adverse effects on the environment, including wildlife, the lawsuit states. However, the agency has never considered glyphosate's impacts on monarchs. The NRDC and other environmental organizations have asked the EPA to review what they say is a large body of scientific evidence demonstrating glyphosate's devastating effects on monarchs, but the EPA has not acted, the suit claims. In response, the EPA issued a statement saying it is taking several steps to protect the butterflies, but the science on the issue is, quote, still evolving, unquote. There are multiple factors that may be affecting monarchs, including loss of habitat, weather, and pesticides, the EPA continued. The orange and black spotted monarchs, renowned for migrating thousands of miles over many generations from Mexico across the United States to Canada and then back again, have seen their numbers fall dramatically in recent years, according to the Center for Biological Diversity. The lawsuit states that the monarch population was tallied at 1 billion in 1997, and this winter was down to 56.5 million butterflies, the second lowest number ever measured. The lawsuit states that a key cause of the monarch demise is the application of glyphosate to farm fields and the resulting destruction of the milkweed habitat that migrating monarchs rely on. Glyphosate is popular around the world because of its effectiveness in killing weeds that choke off gardens, yards, and farm fields. It is used by farmers Its use by farmers has risen over the last 20 years with the development of crops genetically engineered to tolerate being sprayed directly with Roundup. The suit seeks a court order forcing EPA to evaluate glyphosate's effects on monarch butterflies and impose measures to mitigate harm to them. This month, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service said it was helping launch a $3.2 million campaign aimed at saving the butterfly's habitat. And Sea Shepherd commends the Australian boarding of a poaching vessel. Sea Shepherd has responded to news that Australian Customs has boarded the Interpol wanted poaching vessel Kunlun, commending Border Patrol for their action and calling on the arrest of the wanted poaching vessel. The Kunlun was intercepted west of the Cocos or Keeling Islands yesterday. Sea Shepherd suspects the vessel was en route from the Antarctic to Southeast Asia to unload its illegal catch. The Kunlun has a long history of illegal fishing activity, as well as being included on the Commission for Conservation of Antarctic Marine Life Living Resources blacklist of illegal, unregulated, and unreported fishing vessels. Just last month, the vessel was issued with an Interpol purple notice after it was caught fishing illegally in Australian waters in the Southern Ocean by the New Zealand Navy. On February 2nd, the Kunlun was intercepted by the Sea Shepherd ship, the Sam Simon, again inside Australian waters. The Sam Simon then pursued the vessel out of its hunting grounds in the Southern Ocean. Captain Peter Hammerstedt of the Sea Shepherd ship Bob Barker said the Kunlun was first intercepted by the New Zealand Navy in Australian waters in January, fishing illegally. 2 weeks later, it was still fishing illegally until shut down by the San Simon. The evidence against the Kunlun is overwhelming. We have the images, we have the video, and now Australian Customs and Border Protection have the opportunity to seize the illegal catch. We commend the Australian government for boarding the Kunlun. Australia has every right to arrest this poaching vessel, and now we expect to see it brought to the nearest Australian port to see justice done. Captain Sid Chakravarti of the San Simon said, for the past 3 months, the Australian government has claimed that taking port action against toothfish poachers is more effective than patrolling. It is encouraging to see that they have changed their tune. We've seen the Australian government take its leadership in the Southern Ocean seriously when they took Japan to the International Court of Justice on the issue of whaling. Now we need strong action from Australia to show that illegal fishing will not be tolerated in the Southern Ocean, and that the only action that will see an end to the Kunlun's poaching career is the arrest and seizure at sea. The Kunlun is one of six vessels that are still known to engage in illegal, unreported fishing for Antarctic and Patagonian toothfish in the Southern Ocean. The Bob Barker is currently engaged in a record-breaking pursuit of the most notorious of the six vessels, the Nigerian Flag Thunder, after it was intercepted on the Bonzar Bank in Antarctica on December 17th. The outlaw vessels in the focus of Sea Shepherd's current Southern Ocean Defense Program, Operation Icefish. Commencing in December last year, Operation Icefish is Sea Shepherd's 11th Southern Ocean Defense Campaign and the first to target illegal, unregulated, and unreported fishing in the waters of Antarctica. And Interpol has taken evidence against the Thunder from Sea Shepherd. Captain Sid Chakravarti and the crew of the Sea Shepherd ship San Simon completed the handover of evidence implicating the Nigerian-flagged internationally wanted vessel Thunder in illegal fishing activity in the Southern Ocean. The final pieces of evidence, including sections of the illegal gill net, buoys, nets, lines, and anchor shackles, were collected by local authorities in Port Louis, Mauritius, under the direction of a criminal intelligence officer from the international policing organization Interpol. Local police, Coast Guard, and the scene of crime officers, Mauritian fisheries officers, as well as other local and international Interpol officials, worked together to close out the final parts of the investigation. Captain Chakravarti said, we have come to the conclusion of what has been an extremely successful cooperative exercise with Interpol and local law enforcement authorities in Mauritius. The proceedings have been undertaken in a thorough and stringent manner that reflects the gravity of the offenses committed by Thunder. With national and international policing agencies on high alert, now armed with the evidence from the indefatigable efforts of the Sea Shepherd crews over the past 3 months, the Thunder is at the end of its long and destructive past. The Sam Simon arrived in Mauritius last Wednesday. Since then, Captain Chakravarti and the crew of Sea Shepherd ship have been assisting authorities in their ongoing inquiries into the illegal fishing activities of the Thunder. In December 2013, the Thunder was issued with an Interpol purple notice for suspected illegal fishing activity following a joint effort by New Zealand, Australian, and Norwegian authorities. On December 17th of last year, the Sea Shepherd ship Bob Barker intercepted the Thunder on the Bonzar Bank in Antarctica. The Thunder immediately fled from the Bob Barker, leaving behind thousands of meters of illegal fishing gear in the Southern Ocean. Since then, the Bob Barker has maintained pursuit of the Thunder, today marking day 79 of what has become a record-breaking continuous chase of the poaching vessel. The captain of the Bob Barker, Peter Hammerstedt, said, with such a proactive response from international and local law enforcement in Mauritius, we are even more determined than ever to maintain our pursuit of the Thunder, to secure its delivery to authorities in the next port, and to assist in every way possible to ensure these criminals are prosecuted to the full extent of the law. On December 25th of last year, the San Simon commenced retrieval operations to remove the illegal fishing gear abandoned by the Thunder from the waters of the Bonzar Bank. More than 72 kilometers of illegal gillnet was recovered over a three-week period, and over 1,400 fish weighing a total of 45,000 kilograms were returned to the ocean. The Thunder is the most notorious of the six remaining toothfish poaching vessels that are known to engage in illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing for toothfish in the Southern Ocean. And for more information, go to www.seashepherd.org.au. That's seashepherd.org.au. And 77 known Oregon gray wolves made it through 2014 in this story by Kelly House of the Oregonian, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Wolves in Oregon continued to recover last year, bringing the number of known wolves in the state to 77. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife has released numbers from its annual wolf count conducted at the end of each year. At last count in early 2014, there were 64 wolves in Oregon. That number has been climbing yearly since the apex predators crossed into Oregon from northeastern Idaho in the mid-2000s. Last year's growth rate was slower than in 2014. I would think that's a misprint. And then in 2013, spurring Oregon Wild Conservation Director Steve Pedry to argue that while the continued signs of wolf recovery are encouraging, the population remains fragile. Oregon's continued wolf recovery opens up new questions about whether existing protections for the animals should continue. Gray wolves are listed under Oregon State's Endangered Species Act. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife announced last month that there are now 8 breeding pairs in the state, enough to trigger a review of their endangered status. In the coming months, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife wildlife biologists will conduct a status review detailing how wolves are faring. They'll present their findings to the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission, which will have final say over whether to remove the wolves from Oregon's list. Pedry contends their answer should be no. You'll struggle to find a credible scientist willing to say a couple dozen wolves in the northeast corner of the state is a real recovery, he said. ODFW must resist giving in to political pressure, declare mission accomplished, and turn their back on important protections for wolves that have gotten this far. The Oregon Cattlemen's Association, however, advocates for delisting. The organization's leadership argues wolves pose a danger to their livestock and protections that prevent ranchers from taking lethal action against wolves except in specific circumstances should be removed. Here are some statistics from the wolf count. There are 9 wolf packs statewide. 8 packs have breeding pairs. 26 pups survived through the end of 2014. There were 6 new pairs of wolves compared to 2013. 11 confirmed incidents of wolves killing livestock, down from 13 in 2013. $150,830 was awarded in 8 counties to help ranchers prevent wolf depredation and to repay ranchers whose cattle were killed. 4,496 people subscribed to Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife's Wolf Update pages on the web. And hundreds of koalas have been euthanized in Australia in this story by Jenny Ryle, found on Mashable on the Earth First Newswire. Hundreds of koalas have been killed by lethal injection in Australia due to an overpopulation crisis near the Great Ocean Road in Victoria. The Australian reported 686 koalas were euthanized in secret by wildlife authorities in 3 separate operations in 2013 and 2014. The culling project was kept under wraps due to fears of a community backlash. Deakin University lecturer Desley Wishon, who specializes in koalas, clarified to Mashable that it was not a secret cull, but a program implemented to reduce the suffering of starving koalas. She said despite reports, there was no efforts to keep the program secret. Koalas were captured by wildlife officials in public view before being sedated and put down. Healthy females were treated with fertility control hormone implants before being released into the wild in an attempt to help with population control. Koalas in the bushland habitat of Cape Otway are starving due to the sheer numbers of the native animals and a decline of their food source, manna gum trees. Wishon said the numbers may have dwindled to 1,000 to 2,000 koalas in the region due to remaining gum trees being in poor condition. Koala overbrowsing has caused drastic declines of woodland health and extent. In some areas, the dieback is so severe that it has caused the entire canopy death, and koalas are suffering too. Cape Otway's Conservation Ecology Center wrote on its website. It highlights solutions that were in place, such as planting 80,000 tree seedlings in the affected areas of woodland at Cape Otway. State and Environment Minister Lisa Neville said it is a complex and challenging issue, which the government is trying to address in the most effective and humane way. It's clear it's an overpopulation issue, and it is clear that we have had koalas suffer in the Cape Otway area because of ill health and starvation, she said, according to the ABC. It's just not good enough, and that's a terrible way to treat koalas. I'm wanting to make sure that we're taking the best action we can in this terrible situation of overpopulation. I don't want to see koalas suffer. Wishin praised the government's action in the region, saying it was the only option for the koalas that were past saving. She said although many people suggested relocation, there is no suitable habitat not already populated, and the move could cause koalas more stress. Euthanasia of sick koalas is a humane action, Wishin said. Anyone who witnessed the problem in 2013 and 14 would agree that it was necessary. It was great that the government responded in the way they did. A long-term management strategy that involves habitat, such as continued tree planting, and koala management, such as fertility control, is essential for addressing the ongoing problems, though. Frank Fontinus, who runs the local caravan park, said the koalas are good for attracting tourists, but says they are totally destroying the environment. Koalas are great for business, but if there's no trees, there's no koalas, he said. A lot more were dying naturally than were euthanized. The whole Cape smelled of dead koalas. It smelled like death. Fontinus called for further government intervention to help solve the problem. Despite the cull in the area, koalas are continuing to overpopulate Cape Otway, and the government continues to look into ways to manage the situation in the future. A skin-eating fungus is devouring the world's salamanders. Over the past several decades, the world has seen hundreds of species of frogs and toads disappear because of the spread of deadly chytrid fungus. Now unleashed by the pet trade, a similar skin-eating fungus in Europe is devouring salamanders and has threatened to wipe out America's many salamanders and newts. Fortunately, the new fungus hasn't yet reached the United States, but if it does invade, there'll be almost no stopping it. The fatality rate for salamanders is 96%. They're asking you to urge the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to use its power under the Lacey Act to suspend all imports of salamanders not certified to be free of this deadly fungus, and we want to thank the Center for Biological Diversity for that tip. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM. You can listen to a rebroadcast here tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock on Friday. On Monday nights at 9:30, you can listen to 90.3 KRFP Radio Free Moscow, Idaho, or you could tune in on the internet to Free Radio Edmonton, yegradio.wordpress.com. That's yegradio.wordpress.com. When you get there, click on search, and they present the Earth First Update at 2 o'clock on Saturdays and 10 a.m. on Sundays, Mountain Time. Or you could go to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, forall.net. And there you can listen online or download this or any previous Earth First Update. I want to thank you for listening to the Earth First Update. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Thank you for listening.